Everyone has their own unique views and needs when it comes to financial success. If you'd like to leave your financial woes behind and live a life of financial freedom, you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. The show will help you with the ins and outs of money. We talk about financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars and keeping you up at night. We talk about money, tax reduction, saving more, spending less, 401ks, risk management, retirement, and everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. Now, here is your host of Saving with Steve, Steve Sexton.
Hello, welcome to the Saving with Steve show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money, pretty much everything under the sun that relates to you having a happier, healthier relationship with money. I want to thank you for joining us today. My name is Steve Sexton. I want to thank you for sharing us with your friends and family and associates. We're getting close to a million listeners, so we're really happy with that. This week, got a lot of inquiries about real estate. We've got Glenn Anderson here. He's a frequent visitor to the show to talk about what's happening here. A lot of real estate gets sold. People got questions about foreclosures, short sales. What's going on with the increased interest rates? What does that mean to the real estate market? So Glenn's going to be talking about that. I'm going to talk to you a little bit right now about what's going on in the markets. Right now, we're trying to figure out a caution notice issued by Morgan Stanley, their chief equity strategist, said, you know, the market is well overvalued. We don't know it could take down the market. It could be a flash crash. We've got Citibank indicating that there's 88% are long in the S&P 500, which means 88% of the investments in the S&P are long, but they're also in the red, which means they're losing. And you have very few stocks that are actually moving forward with the market. I mean, that Magnificent Seven, everybody keeps talking about it, but it's also the S&P 500. And we're in a situation where you have 2 to 4 stocks carrying the enormity of the whole marketplace at S&P 500. It went from 7 to 4. Pretty soon it'll be the final 2, just like the NCAA tournament. And then we have a downturn. But the question is, what is it going to take to burst this bubble? So let's think about it. Think geopolitical. Because if you go back to 2000, 2008, you've got the tech bubble, you got the mortgage crisis, you got the pandemic of 2020. What event is it going to take? Is it going to be, you know, you think geopolitical, where you've got Iran, China, Gaza, Israel, you got Russia? Is it the fact that Fed doesn't lower interest rates? All the market's been talking about the headlines. They haven't. We're supposed to have, 5 or 6 of those this year. So far, they're not doing it because inflation is still pretty resilient. Is it going to be the issues with oil now that Iran is making threats and is bombing Israel? Is it the fact that the U.S. debt is so darn high? Is it, you know, gold? Whatever it is, we're in a situation, whether it be me, my charts, the experts, we're in a bubble. So it's so very, very important to look at creating and protecting your lifestyle. And the way you do that is you isolate and protect your purpose-driven money. That's the money that you use to support and maintain your lifestyle. It's the money that you use to cover your health care later in life. Time is not an ally of your purpose money. The reason being is if the market go down, you still need your money now. So that's the reason why you have to isolate and protect it. On top of that, you have purpose-driven money. That purpose-driven money is that legacy money. If it goes up or down or goes away, it doesn't affect your lifestyle. It's the legacy money there. So it's important that you analyze and figure out what portion is your purpose money. And then you look at how do I isolate and protect that. So folks, I want to thank you for joining us there. Stick with us. We're going to be right back. I'm going to be introducing you right now, just in a few moments, to Glenn Henderson.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reduction, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hello, welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money. Pretty much everything on the sun relates to you having a happy, healthy relationship with money. My name is Steve Sexton. I want to thank you for joining us. We have somebody special. We have Glenn Henderson. He's been in the real estate business for decades. He's very, very, very well respected. He's been on the show before. You know what? We're going to be talking about what happened in 2024 with real estate and here in 2025, but we're also going to be talking about, you know what, people looking to rebuild, all that kind of stuff. We're going to talk a little bit about that and things you need to know in case, you know, so you don't get scammed after a tragedy. Because the reality, it happens more often than you think. And with that, Glenn, I want to welcome you to the show. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me on, Steve. Always good to be here.
Well, definitely, definitely. Our viewers and our listeners love it. You know what? Besides that, if you are selling, I've got Glenn. He's going to go through his five components of selling your house for the most amount of money. And you know what? I'm going to say this. There's many people who've just downloaded that one item from our podcast, and we continue to get responses. So we love it. Now, Glenn, let's talk about what happened in 2024 with real estate, and then we can go into the rest.
Perfect. So 2024, biggest thing that people felt was the increase in mortgage rates that we had. You know, we hit a peak where we were in the mid to upper 7% range. And we have come back down and broke back into the 6%. Today, I think we're at right around 6.75%. But it was basically a roller coaster of ups and downs with the interest rates. But what was interesting is a lot of markets, we still saw home prices going up, not at the levels that we had before, but we saw gradual increases, and it was due to the lack of inventory. And I think we still have over 90% or 91% of homeowners that have mortgages under 6%. So because of that, a lot of people aren't making transitions, or what we would normally call like our move up or move down buyers. Mm-hmm. They're not making those moves. So it's really a lot of the sales are either forced, situations of death, divorce, you know, debt, you know, people are too overwhelmed in debt, and they need to just be able to sell to, or people are relocating. So if it's not a life event, people aren't making the transitions, and that's keeping the inventory really low. And so that combination of the low inventory is still pushing prices up. And that's created a situation where we have the lowest affordability index. So basically, you know, people being able to afford their homes that we've had ever since that's been tracked.
Okay. So here's another question. My understanding is the state was really looking to push home development. Mm-hmm. They're looking to do the projects and all that kind of stuff. Has that been stymied because of regulation, or it just takes a lot to get who are the companies that like
builders?
Builders. Yeah. Yes.
So most of the regulation or the lifting of the red tape and the regulations they put in place is it affects builders that are developing rental units. So apartment buildings, and then most of those projects, if they have a certain percentage, which I think is around 15%, that are dedicated to low income housing, then they're able to build additional units. But majority of those are apartments. So we're, you know, seeing a little bit of an increase in available units, but it's as far as actual for home ownership, the regulations aren't impacting that nearly the same, and there's just still a shortage of homes.
Okay. So I was really curious about that. So let's talk a little bit about, I know prices are still going up a little bit.
So when it comes to the foreclosure and short sale market, now that interest rates are high and people don't have the ability or, you know, they can't afford to refinance just because the rates are so much higher, they're three times higher than they were just a few years ago. Are we seeing more foreclosures, short sales? Are they starting to tick up?
We're not to that point yet, but what we are seeing is an increase in defaults. So an increase in the number of people that are behind. But it's not just on mortgages. There's so credit card and consumer debt is at an all-time high. But also the default rate on auto loans, consumer debt, credit card debt, all across the board, defaults are on their way up they're increasing right now. We still have our short sale business, which from the last crash. And what I've noticed is we've been getting a lot more inquiries over the last about month and a half, 2 months. But the majority of them are people looking for options to try and complete a loan modification. So right now, we're what I feel is the earlier stage. People are starting to they're burdened with a lot of debt. They're starting to fall behind on some of their consumer debt. Typically, the last thing somebody will stop paying on is their mortgage. But people are burdened with debt. They're starting to fall behind. And people don't want to lose their homes because, you know, if they do lose it, you know, one, you have to find somewhere new. It's your home. But rents are high, interest rate prices, everything's high. So even if you lose the current home, where do you go from there? So people are trying to find solutions to keep their homes right now. So we're not in the early stage. Everyone's looking for options. Everyone's looking for ways to try and keep in their home. But mm-hmm. I think, you know, these people where they're trying to do loan modifications now, the banks are not doing loan modifications. So it's almost impossible to get one through. So then these are the people that maybe in another 6 months, 10 months, a year, you know, we will see in a situation where they may be needing to short sale or foreclose, or, you know, they'll still have enough equity where they can sell it, but they're going to have to put their home on the market. And that's going to be one of those life event sales where it's debt is, forcing the sale.
I see. Okay. So, all right. So,
because real estate's a big run up that we had in prices over these last, you know, 3-4 years, a lot of people still have a lot of equity in their homes. So that's why one of the reasons why we're not seeing as many of the short sales or foreclosures right now is because so many people do have equity. But it's the people that bought in the last 2 years, you know, which I think we'll start to see more of those coming up in the, you know, upcoming year, 2 years, as some of the more of the short sales and the foreclosures.
Okay. So yeah, it seems like a lot of that stuff's starting to go, and it just, well, I hate to say it with the doom side, but in a matter of months, 6 to 8 months, maybe the end of the year, we could be there and seeing I don't want to say a vibrant foreclosure, but the short sale market, but we could be seeing that just because the rates are so high.
Yeah, I think we'll at least see a lot more of them coming on the market.
Okay. Perfect. Let's see. Hey, folks. Hey, I want you to stick with us. We're going to be right back with more Glenn Henderson and what's going on in the real estate market.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve Show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hello, welcome back to the Saving with Steve show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money. I truly want to thank you for tuning in. Appreciate you for letting us, you know, letting your friends, family, and associates know about the show. Again, I hope you're kicking off to a wonderful year. You can get all the replays at savingwithsteve.us. If you're enjoying the stories of helpful information and insight on Saving with Steve, then I encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. Never miss a show. Check out a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio New York City, E360 TV, and Las Vegas TV Networks. All these networks are dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, and live a life of personal and financial freedom. Hey, Glenn, welcome back to the show, everybody. We're talking to Glenn Henderson, real estate expert. You know what? Glenn was sharing before the show started about a situation where he had to go up to the Los Angeles area to do an inspection. So tell everybody what happened.
Yeah, so we did have an inspection scheduled for property in LA. Unfortunately, it's been affected by the fires, the Palisade fire there in Brentwood. Very fortunately, this home hasn't burned and it looks like they're going to make it through okay. But yeah, that was going to be an inspection and pre-inspection for one of our clients, getting their home on the market. The pre-inspections we always like to do just to find out about any issues, potential issues or problems that could come up during the actual home sale. So by doing the inspection up front, then we're able to identify those problems and address them if needed, or at least disclose them to the buyers up front so that they're not an issue when we get into escrow.
Mm-hmm. So, you know what, and here's the other thing. I have a few clients and I'm just going to share this. They're in the Palisades area. Both of them live a couple streets over from each other, and they were told to evacuate. And they were about a quarter mile walking distance from their house, and they just watched their house burned. And the fire was so hot, and the winds were so high that he goes, it was 10, 12, maybe 15 minutes, and that house was gone. And then another client had lost their house just a few streets over. The other thing that was interesting is one of the people I was talking to was up in the area. When I was talking to him, they got an evacuation notification, and they also explained to me that their son-in-law was a firefighter, and he got called in, but also got told to go home because they didn't have enough equipment and didn't know where they were going to get the water from because they didn't have enough water, which is very, very interesting. And as a result of these fires, we saw 10,000 plus homes that were burnt to the ground. Is that somewhere around there, or maybe even more?
Probably even more. Yeah.
But the big thing, so Glenn, could you talk people through, you know what, California is notorious for so much regulation that slows things down tremendously. So could give everybody an idea, you know, I just thank my lucky stars that my house isn't there and they don't have to go through this. But could you give everybody an idea of what they're really looking at here from the way of trying to rebuild, that's regulation stuff and so on?
Yeah, so you've got the normal, all of the building permitting and that process that you need to go through, which in California is a nightmare, especially in the larger cities. But then also there's California Coastal Commission, which will have oversight over a lot of these properties, which California Coastal Commission is an entity that a lot of us feel should not be in place, or if it is in place, they've overstep what their initial purpose was, but they create a lot of issues for people trying to build. And then once you get through that entire permitting process, there's going to be a real challenge for people to find contractors, because we already had such a shortage in labor and contractors if you were, you know, before this happened. So now that we've got, you know, 10,000 plus people that are going to be trying to rebuild homes, there's going to be a backlog of years of people trying to get through projects. And the big problem or concern is that anytime there's something like this, a natural disaster or anything, there's so many scammers and people that come out of the woodwork. And even in a normal environment, you and I were briefly talked about in San Diego, there's a contractor that was supposed to be specializing in ADUs. He was getting people to take out loans on their properties to build the ADU. And he disappeared with over 100 families' money, over $15 million, and he's left the country and disappeared and, you know, now on the wanted list. And that's just in a normal market. So now that we have this natural disaster, we have people are going to be desperate to rebuild their emotions, everything else. There's going to be a lot of unscrupulous people, I feel like, that are going to be trying to take advantage of people. And one of them is going to be contractors or fake contractors that are going to be trying to take people's money. So I think people are just going to need to be very diligent and be watching, just double checking everything, whether it's insurance related, contractor, anything else. There's going to be people that are trying to take advantage of the situation, unfortunately.
Glenn, I know you've done a number of things through contractors for people who are about to sell their house or buy a house. If somebody's looking at a contractor, especially in these times, you know what? We all know there's a race to get the house done and get back to where normal, and that's going to be a while. And sometimes that clouds judgment, emotion clouds judgment. But what are the things that people should be looking for or checking, regardless of who is the contractor?
Yeah. So, of course, if you're able to get a referral or talk to somebody or talk to people that this contractor's worked for and see the projects or verify that they've completed projects, you definitely want to check the state, the California Contractors Board, to verify that they have an active license, that they don't have any violations, penalties, or, and that they carry all the proper insurance on it. And then most importantly is when you sign the contract, a contractor should never be asking for money up front. Per the California laws, they cannot collect more than, I think it's $1,000 up front. But the payments that take place should be as they hit benchmarks and work has been completed. You should never be prepaying for any type of work. It should only be paid as they hit certain tiers or benchmarks of work completed, and then you're paying for what was done. And that's where a lot of people get into trouble, is the contractors ask for these large deposits and a lot of money up front, and then once they collect that money, they disappear.
Now, when somebody's actually doing the work, I'm just going to say this. I know of somebody who said, hey, this was my friend that used this person. They did a good job and so on and so forth. And they just continue to write the check without inspecting anything to see where it's at. So if there's always this checkpoint where they say, hey, we've got this much done, you need to pay us more money. And it's usually in the contract, but you need to go check to make sure that was done. And we had one person that kept giving money, and the reality is nothing was getting done. They were just giving money and they didn't check it because they had already trusted that person because it was a friend that gave the referral, that type of thing. So I'm saying, hey, I like Ronald Reagan in this situation, trust but verify.
100% it happens. People would be surprised how often and how frequently it happens. The guy that I mentioned in San Diego that was able to take off with $15 million, over $15 million, over 100 people's money. It's just incredible that that many people were willing to, he was able to fool that many people to into paying him ahead of time. And it just shows like it happens, and it happens a lot. So you just have to be very diligent. And like you said, trust but verify.
Mm-hmm. Well, the interesting thing is that if you think about what it takes to steal 100 people's money and have really nobody say anything about it, until the person's gone, that means the person was really good at what they were doing and really good at placating people. Yeah. And you know what? He or she or whoever it was probably had he had to do it in 30, 45 days and then run. Otherwise, people would be all over him by then. So it's really interesting. So you've really got to pay attention, especially in these times. My understanding is they were even catching people who are trying to burglarize and already in the fire areas. So that's just beyond me how people would steal. But you know what? I don't think that way, and other people's do. So you know what? If you're having people go through the demolishment, this is my experience from working at AAA many, many years ago. I would make sure you go through yourself and see if there's things that you can find that have value to you, because you obviously had to leave that house pretty darn fast and wanted to be able to get things. For example, the Olympian who let his medals burn. I think if he was going back and sifting through things, he'd probably love to get one of those medals back, even though it's not that important. So I'm just saying, look for those things that are important before you allow somebody to go in and demolish things, so to speak. And clear everything out before you get going. So folks, hey, Glenn, stick with us. We're going to be right back with more Saving with Steve.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve Show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night.
We're
going to talk about money, tax reduction, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthy happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
The forecast for mortgage rates are mixed.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
But we're not going to see a big drop in interest rates in 2025. Based on where we're at still with inflation, cost of consumer goods, everything else, it doesn't line up that we're going to see any big decrease in the mortgage rates. As far as home prices, I think it's going to be very region specific. Some areas that are more affordable, I think we'll still see, and it's forecasted that we'll still see some moderate growth and appreciation. Other markets, we're seeing a decrease in prices. Others are remaining stable. So a lot of it just depends on the location or region, and then just the affordability and where prices are right now. For example, with San Diego, because of the problem or the lack of inventory and housing that's available, and now especially with the number of people that have been displaced in LA, you know, it's expected that we will see appreciation in our market this year, you know, similar to last year where it's going to be a few percent, but we will see, you know, some continued growth where other markets were, you know, are experiencing a drop in prices because income and people coming into the market and buying, this demand isn't high enough to meet, you know, what current prices are. So they're feeling the pressure of the high rates and the continual, you know, it's 6-7% rates.
Now, when it comes to all these displaced people, is that going to, would you expect that to impact the rental market?
You know,
I would think it would if you got 10,000 new people, but you know what? What would that mean for rents?
Yeah, so it's 100%. It's going to affect the rental market, and there's going to be, I feel, you know, there's not enough housing in LA for all of these people. So I feel, you know, a lot will probably end up in other parts of the country. A lot will come south to Orange County or San Diego, or maybe going north up to Bay Area. But it's going to put pressure on the rental market, which, you know, most what you would expect that we're going to see prices going up. You know, right now what they're dealing with is a lot of people are trying to, people meaning landlords and property managers, are trying to take advantage of the situation, and they're jacking rental rates up, you know, exponentially. But LA has been very clear that, you know, they're going to be going after those people because there's the state laws that, you know, that prohibit price gouging. And the most that somebody can increase a cost of goods is 10% in the time of a natural disaster or an emergency. So these people that are increasing, you know, doubling what they were asking for rent, you know, 2 weeks ago, I think those people are going to run into a lot of problem because LA, the sheriff and mayor have been very clear that they're going to be going after those people for it. But I think just naturally we are going to see an increase in rent throughout the whole region.
I see. Okay. And then, you know what, one of the big things is whether you're, you know, here in Los Angeles, San Diego, Orange County, anywhere in the United States, if you're looking to sell for whatever reason, the key is to always be prepared or put yourself in a position to sell your house for the most amount of money. And, you know, Glenn and his team have this wonderful process, these five steps, the five items that you're going to want to go through and you're going to want to do in order to put your house in a position to sell for the most amount of money. So Glenn, could you walk through our listeners with that, please?
Yeah.
So first is the pre-inspection. So when you sell your home, the buyers have a contingency period where they're going to come in, do inspections, bring in home inspector, termite inspector, probably sewer line or septic inspection, and they're going to try and find anything wrong with the home and then use that as a point to negotiate either credits, ask for repairs, or they could potentially cancel because a big item is found. So we like to do a pre-inspection. So at the pre-inspection, we have a home inspector come in, termite inspector, sewer or septic line inspections, and basically do what the buyers would do once we get into escrow and find any potential issues, problems, and then determine is this something that we need to address and fix ahead of time, or do we just need to know it's there so we can properly disclose it to the buyer before we negotiate the contract? And then that way, there's no surprises once we get into escrow, because basically the whole objective is to eliminate surprises.
So let's talk about that one thing. You know what? I still remember the first time I sold a house, and obviously we didn't really do that. And we ended up, because of a small termite exposure, and we're talking about, this much, besides getting it fumigated for changing out the board for $300, it cost me $5,000 on the price of the house. And all for that. And if I had just had that taken care of in advance, it would have saved me 5,000. And this is something that people need to look at all the time, because you just lose money if you're not paying attention to this. So this is one wonderful first step that somebody should take.
And the second is staging slash preparing the home for the market. So with that, staging doesn't just mean bringing in furniture if it's a vacant home, but staging, what I mean is working on curb appeal. So this could be pressure washing the home, painting the eaves, redoing the landscaping in the front yard, or at least cleaning up, decluttering inside. There's a lot of steps just to preparing the home and making it look as good as possible and getting it market ready. A lot of times, what we'll do if somebody's living in their home, advise them on what to take out as far as the decluttering process. And then sometimes we'll take out old furniture, have a new couch or something smaller that fits the room better brought in. Because a lot of times, what shows the best in the home isn't always what's most practical or comfortable for living in the home. So, you might have that extra large sofa in the living room that's, great to lounge on and comfortable. But it's, maybe too big for the room and makes the room feel smaller. So let's take that out and bring in an appropriately sized couch for the purpose of the sale.
Oh, that's good, because and I could see that, because I knew somebody who had an English garden in the front, and it just really looked like a messy weeds, but they loved it. And they really didn't get anybody that looked at their house until they actually removed all that and put in hedges and made it look tight and neat and stuff like that. So it's interesting. That curb appeal is a big deal.
It is. And especially right now, where home prices are high and interest rates are so high, people are don't want a home that's going to be a project that they're going to have to put more money into. So if we can make it show really well, take care of the small items, fix things up, it's going to attract a lot more buyers. And then the third is pricing. So with pricing, one of the questions I get often is, well, why don't we start higher so we have room to negotiate? And a lot of times that's counterproductive, because if a home is priced too high, what you run into is then buyers have access to all the information. They see that all the other homes in the area or on the street are selling at a certain price, and then you're priced 10% higher. Those homes aren't getting shown, especially now with rates being so high. So then you're basically negotiating against yourself and you're having to do price reductions. And the most activity and the best time or most productive time is the first 2 weeks that the home's on the market. So if you're priced too high and you're not capturing the buyers, then you're just chasing the market down. And if you price a home accurately or even a little bit aggressively, meaning a little bit below market value, and you market it well, you're going to be in a position that you have multiple offers, and you're going to be in a position then where you're negotiating the price up, and that's how you're going to get the highest price for the home.
That's great. I've talked to a few of your clients, and they're very, very happy with that. When you have six or seven people bidding on your same house, it just keeps going up and up and up. So that's pretty cool.
Oh yeah,
And
and I was going to say that's the time where when you have the bidding and people competing, that's when people's emotions are involved. People meaning the buyers. They've fallen in love with the home. They can see their family there. And then they're at that position where, okay, well, if we spend a little bit more, you know, in price, we can get it. And when you have emotions involved, people are willing to go up. And that's why it's why this strategy works so well is, you know, you have that, and then people are just, you know, naturally competitive and they want to win. So emotions are involved. They're competitive. They want to win. They want to get the property. And then you just watch that price get bid up. It's a great position to be in instead of doing price reductions and only having one offer that's, you know, 100,000 below what you had listed it for because they think they're going to get a deal.
You know what? It's interesting that you say that because I have a neighbor, I'm going to say 8, 9 months ago, I heard him fighting out in the front yard over the price that he wanted to list the house at. And they went back and forth and the realtor just finally says, look, you really got to trust me here because if it's too high, nobody's going to come. Nobody's going to see it. And then he finally said, F it. Okay, fine. And he actually priced the house at about $50,000 less than what market was. And they had 8 offers and ended up selling for $100,000 more than he thought it would go for. And, he kept telling me, goes, hey, he was right. So, yeah, that's a great strategy. A lot of people don't realize that. So
it works. And then fourth is the marketing. So a lot of agents are very passive in the sense that, you know, they'll put it on the internet, put a sign in the front yard, maybe do an open house and then just wait to see what happens, where you want to make sure that the person that's representing the sale is very proactive with the marketing. So we have a strategy of once we get the home prepared and ready for the market, we have our pre-listing phase and pre-market phase where, you know, for a week we're marketing the home before we even start to show it. So we'll go on the market on a Monday. That whole week we're pushing the property out through social media, mail, different media channels to get as many eyes and as much interest in the property as possible. And then we'll start showing it that weekend at the open house. So we have a strategy behind everything that we do, but that strategy is to aggressively market the home, get it in front of as many people as possible. So that way, when we do start showing it, we have a very productive and busy Saturday and Sunday. And, you know, again, going back to kind of the psychology of buyers and people, if you do everything correct and we condense the showings into that weekend, that first weekend, and you have a lot of people there, everyone sees, wow, there's a lot of interest in this home. There's, I need to hurry up and get an offer in before, you know, this other person does. But also too, it helps people to internally confirm that it's a good decision, because if somebody else wants it and somebody else is willing to pay that price, it must be a good deal. So it's okay for me to want it. And it's, again, going kind of back to the psychology of people and buyers. So there's a strategy, and you want to make sure you have somebody that's aggressively and actively marketing the property to get as much exposure as possible.
That's great. That's great. So what's the last step?
And the last one is the negotiating. So we talked about the pre-inspection, and when you have a contract, you go into contract with the buyer, really there's 2 points of negotiation. So you have the first point when you're negotiating the price. So the marketing, the strategy to create a situation where we have multiple offers and we're able to get the property bid up. But the second point of negotiation is once you're in escrow and then the buyers do all their inspections. So if we've done everything correctly, we did the inspections up front, we've disclosed everything before we went into contract with the buyers, we basically eliminate that second point of negotiations and eliminate that opportunity for them to ask for the big price reductions or credits or these other items. And but the big thing is you want to make sure you have somebody that's willing to put in the extra work, put in the extra steps, and willing to negotiate for you and make sure you get top dollar in the best terms possible. Because you'd be amazed how many deals we see where, you know, sellers are advised to just take the first offer that comes in, or advised not to counter, you know, be happy with the terms that they got. And, I would say, you know, we could pull up 100 homes right now. And, you know, I would say at least 30, 40%, maybe 50%, we could go through and they probably could have got, you know, another few percent in price if things had been done correctly and followed all these steps that we talked about. But the negotiating is definitely a big part, and you need somebody that's going to be aggressively doing that for you.
Okay. Perfect. Let's see. Hey, folks. Hey, I want you to stick with us. We're going to be right back with more Glenn Henderson and what's going on in the real estate market.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve Show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hello, welcome back to the Saving with Steve Show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money. I truly want to thank you for tuning in. Appreciate you for letting us, you know, letting your friends, family, and associates know about the show. Again, I hope you're kicking off to a wonderful year. You can get all the replays at savingwithsteve.us. If you're enjoying the stories of helpful information and insight on Saving with Steve, then I encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. Never miss a show. Check out a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio New York City, E360 TV, and Las Vegas TV Networks. All these networks are dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, and live a life of personal and financial freedom. Hey, Glenn, welcome back to the show, everybody. We're talking to Glenn Henderson, real estate expert. You know what? I'm just going to, you know what? When it comes to negotiating, you know, the process is usually somebody puts an offer in and then they counter. How many times is realistic for people to go back and forth depending on what's there? I mean, if you have a clean house and nothing needs to be fixed, you know, is it you know, how often would people go back and forth?
So it kind of depends, but if all of these steps are taken, it goes the way we expect, where we have the situation of multiple offers. Usually there'll be counter offers, sellers will counter asking for highest and best. Buyers will come back with, you know, their price. Then we'll identify, okay, who are our top two or three? Then there'll be maybe one more counter. So I would say on average, two counter offers.
Okay. Okay. So that should give everybody an idea. Hey, just expect this.
Yeah.
Because if the more you understand what's happening, the easier it is. Because I mean, quite frankly, my wife hates the negotiation thing.
Yeah. A lot of people do, which is understandable.
Yeah, but if you understand what's going on, you're like, okay, this is happening now. I'm good with this. This is happening again. Okay, I'm good with this.
Exactly.
So good. So folks, this is one of the reasons why if somebody's looking to hire a real estate agent, they don't want somebody with a small amount of experience. They want somebody who's been through it, understands these things, and, you know, can do the marketing to get your house to sell. Now, just out of curiosity, how long is a typical house on the market before it sells?
San Diego, our market right now, we're just under 3 weeks for average market time. A lot of markets and areas within San Diego were under a week, if everything's done correctly. But it's interesting, just one little thing can be off. They don't do a good job with photos and the presentation. If the home looks real cluttered or there's problems, just the smallest little items, and you'll see some homes that are the outliers that are sitting on the market for 2-3 months. And it's because buyers are so cautious right now to take any action. So if there's anything that just seems off, or if the price is a little bit too high, you know, that we're definitely, you know, there's homes that we're seeing that are on the market for substantially longer periods of time.
My last question is this: what is the typical impact on somebody who has a house that's priced too high? So for example, in a neighborhood, the houses are selling for $1 million, person's got it at $1.3 million, and you're way above the marketplace. I've seen these before, and I've listened to people. They say, yeah, I started up here, I had to come down, and it's been sitting on the market for a long time. In fact, they had to actually take it off the market and wait 6 or 7 months, and then come back.
When somebody puts their home on the market too high, so your example, your market price should be around a million, you go on at a million two, million three, that home is just, it's not going to receive any activity or showings. And especially nowadays, because buyers have all of the information, they can go on, you know, there's a multitude of websites they can go on and see what other sales have been, what the estimated value of a property is. So if that home stands out, or if it's significantly overpriced, it's just not going to get any interest or any showings. Or if it does, it's just the looky-loos that are coming through. And so that property will sit, it'll spend more time on the market. Eventually, the sellers will come around, do a price reduction. Now, it could be a multiple price reductions before you start to get close to where market value is. And then what happens, the market time goes up. So if you're in a market where homes in that neighborhood are selling in 2 or 3 weeks, and you've been on the market for 2 or 3 months, then of course the perception is, what's wrong with that home? In addition to being priced too high, there must be problems with it. And then by the time you get down to an accurate market price, so now you've got it reduced to a million, and along with the other homes that are priced at a million, but you've been on the market for 3, 4 months, even though the price is accurate, buyers see how long it's been on the market. So there's that perception, there must be problems with this home. And then it's just getting skipped over. And then also any type of data feed where buyers are looking at properties online, all of them sort by time on the market by default. So then yours is at the very bottom of the list. So here at the bottom of the list, you've got that perception of there must be something wrong. And then when people see that a home has spent more time on the market, there's always the perception that, well, there's a good chance that they might be more willing to negotiate. So then you get down to, you're at a million, you're at in line with the other homes, but you've been on the market 3, 4 months, you're going to start receiving those offers at 950, 960,000, because the perception that you need to sell and you're going to be willing to negotiate. One of your neighbor's homes could come on the market at 980. It's a fantastic deal. And then they end up selling for, you know, 1,020,000, 1,050,000. And it's just because of that perception and the wrong strategy with pricing up front.
So it doesn't make sense to try and pop up the highest price right at the beginning. So
no, definitely not. Yeah. The only time that it's all related to residential. If you're dealing with an investment property or that's, you know, multi-unit residential or commercial, just residential, that's different because investors, there's no emotion. It's all just by the numbers. So, you know, if they see a property they're interested in, they're just going to offer what they want to offer. But anything that's related to just residential and there's that emotion and everything else involved, it never works out pricing it high and chasing the market down.
I want to thank you for answering that question. We've actually had about 20 emails that came in from our listeners line or our viewers line. And they're just saying, hey, I've got a relative that's doing this. I think they're crazy, but why does it not make sense, or why does it make sense? Everybody's rationale is they think they're going to be able to negotiate if they start with a higher price. And the reality is, if they're negotiating, it's going to be down. That's basically what you're telling me.
The thing is, no matter what, you're going to be negotiating. So if you start low and you create the bidding war, you're negotiating, but you're in control of the negotiations and you're negotiating and countering at higher prices and pushing the price up. You price too high, then you're just chasing the market down. And then the buyer's the one that's in control, and they're the ones that are dictating more of the terms, and they're the ones that are dictating price. So either way, you're going to be negotiating, but with the right strategy and pricing it correctly, you can be the one that's in charge.
I think that's really important to say. When you take a look at the emotion of somebody who's buying and they've got it in their head, like, I can get this for less because of this, this, and this, or I'm going to have to pay more in order to get what I want. There's a different psychology and emotion that goes along with this, because you've seen those bidding wars go higher and higher just because people want it. And that desire and the need for it is there. But on the lower side, there's less and less. So if there's less and less, I can get it for lower and lower. So it's important for people to realize that. So I want to thank you for sharing that with us today. I think that was wonderful. Glenn, you're a fountain of information when it comes to real estate, and we appreciate you being here today. How can people get a hold of you if they would like your help?
So number is 619-500-3222, 619-500-3222. Website is mypremierhomes.com.
Appreciate that, Glenn. Yeah. Hey, you have a wonderful day. Thanks for being with us. And you know what? We look forward to having you back again sometime.
Hey, thank you, Steve. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Thanks, Glenn. Hey, Glenn, thank you so much for being with us today, sharing the information that you've shared. This has been wonderful. Hey, thank you all for joining join us today on Saving with Steve. We'll look forward to seeing you next week. Stay safe, stay healthy. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us for the Saving with Steve show, hosted by Steve Sexton. To learn more about the show and how to become a guest or sponsor, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Join us again next time as we continue to talk about everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happier relationship with money. This has been the Saving with Steve show, hosted by Steve Sexton.